I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Simon Robinson.
This is Talk Central, episode 184 for the weekend starting 21 July 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, real technology journalism.
On Tech Central this week, the best of MediaTek Africa 2017.
Plus, a $20 4G phone, Vodacom's impressive numbers, OpenServe slashes wholesale prices, and are you brave enough to catch a ride on Elon Musk's Falcon Heavy?
It's Friday, we're at MediaTek, and it's time to podcast. Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard? How's it, Simon?
How's it?
Great. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming back on the show, Simon. We had you on about 2 weeks ago to talk about MediaTek Africa 2017, and here we are at MediaTek Africa 2017.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a cracker show thus far.
Yeah, well, I've just had a brief look around in the last hour, the first time I've actually had a chance to get through here. But Richard, you came through yesterday. It's been quite a bit of time here. What have you seen that's caught your attention?
Well, I've seen that my budget isn't big enough to afford anything at this show, but wow, what an amazing array of technology, especially in the broadcast space, which I'm kind of newly a fond content creator of. A lot of interesting things from cameras. There's a lot of broadcast stuff, so this is a high-end show.
Yeah.
But I was interested by the likes of Canon. They had some really interesting cameras on display. It was very nice to see the drones. You know, there's some really cool drones on display, yeah. But what was the winner for me, definitely, was the Insta360 camera.
Is that the big circle camera of cameras that I saw on one?
No, sorry. That is a time splice action photography rig that allows you to, in bullet time, capture somebody jumping or doing an action. What I'm talking about is a camera, a 360 camera that you can actually broadcast from, live broadcast to the internet. Which puts my 360 rig to shame, unfortunately. But some really cool tech here. Some really cool tech. And lighting. Lighting is phenomenal. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Lots of high-end video production equipment. I think stuff that broadcasters get quite excited about.
Get to play with, yeah.
Probably stuff us podcasters will never get to play with in our lives, but it's good, well, it's cool to see it.
I think there's a lot more in that sort of podcasting space. It's coming more and more. And I think there's been a massive change from business models of a lot of these equipment manufacturers.
They've had to
now start considering how traditional linear broadcasters are dealing with their broadcasting and how they're dealing with content.
Indeed. So Simon, you're the organizer of this show. It's an impressive turnout. I was at the one 2 years ago. It seems busier to me, although it's kind of hard for me to remember 2 years into history, but it does seem like a busy show, which I guess is a little bit surprising given the state of the South African economy at the moment. What does this tell us about the state of the broadcasting media space in South Africa?
I think that every industry really is getting hit by the economic impact. I mean, that's been huge on the whole of South Africa. We were a little bit nervous coming into the show to see what the kind of turnout would be and the enthusiasm of visitors here. Been chatting to a lot of the exhibitors, and there's been phenomenal feedback, and they're actually quite positive. They kind of think that if they could get politics right and so on, we're in for a very bright future.
I get that impression as well. Just talking to people out in the industry, it seems that everyone's ready to start making investments again. We just need to, as you say, get the politics right in this country, and I think we may be in for a bit of a mini boom.
Yeah, I was chatting to quite a few of our internationals, and they've seen such a positive change in Europe. They're seeing a real upswing there, and a lot of them are very, very well aware of what's happening in South Africa, and they think that it's set for positive change if we can get a couple of things right and that sort of thing. The market globally is ready for some investment.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget, South Africa is one of the cheapest countries to make movies in. A lot of these guys, especially drone operators these days, are seeing the benefits in that, even though it's difficult to get licensing at the moment. But having all these production companies come in shooting our beautiful country, there's so much opportunity if we can get this legislation right around it.
Yeah, South Africa, I saw a rating a while ago where we are one of the cheapest countries in the world, but from a technology space point of view, we're not manufacturing technology, the services that we supply around it, state of the art. We're right up there with the rest of the world, so we can really deliver great service to the industry, and particularly within the film industry as well.
Oh yes.
And it's, I mean, no doubt walking around here, the hour I spent here this afternoon, the, you know, the skills are here in South Africa. The guys are here ready to do the stuff, and the show is pretty exciting from that perspective. But we need to talk about news as well. And before we even do that, we need to do our quiz. Simon, could I ask you to kick off our quiz this week with the first question?
First question. Tech Central this week published a podcast with a former CTO of Business Connection who is working on a reversible hydrogen fuel cell. Who is he? And for a bonus point, what is a reversible fuel cell called?
The second question this week's quiz, we're recording this podcast at Miratech Africa 2016. Where is this event taking place?
Our third question, SAP is fighting allegations of kickbacks involving its South African operation. Which SAP board member has been parachuted into the country to deal with the crisis?
Right, and the fourth one, semiconductor company Qualcomm is facing a bruising and increasingly acrimonious legal battle with which major smartphone manufacturer?
And the final question, who has been named as SAP Africa MD in the wake of allegations of kickbacks involving a Gupta-owned company?
That's our quiz. We'll get to the results of that at the end of the show, as always. But let's talk about the news this week. Richard, I went to a really interesting presentation at Qualcomm this week. You know, Qualcomm is the absolutely massive semiconductor company that makes the...
They're in everything.
If you've got a smartphone in your pocket, chances are it's got a Qualcomm chipset inside it. So they've introduced a reference design phone. I think it's called the Qualcomm 805 or 205. 205, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
And this is a 4G phone. It's a 4G feature phone, if you like. It looks just like one of those old Nokia candy bars with a keyboard and a little screen, except this phone is a 4G device. And it costs $20.
Incredible. I mean, the implications of this thing is quite impressive.
This is very entry level. It runs Android KitKat. They're using such an old version of Android because it has a much smaller memory footprint than the more modern versions of Android. Presumably, they'll take advantage of that new Android that Google announced at its developer conference this year, Google I/O, which will have made available for devices with a maximum of a gigabyte of RAM. But interesting that this device is coming to market, and they've already started to introduce these phones. Chinese manufacturers have started taking this reference design from Qualcomm, have started selling devices around the $20 price point into the Indian market. You might ask why, what's the point? This device can do very basic stuff like connecting to WhatsApp and maybe a bit of Facebook and that sort of thing. Qualcomm's thinking behind this is that if they can get the mass market to move off 2G, the 2G handsets that are so prevalent in emerging markets, including South Africa. We've been using smartphones for years, but more than 50% of all active phones connected to the networks in South Africa only support 2G. They won't connect to the 3G or 4G networks.
Goodness, I was not aware of that, really.
Which is a remarkable number. And that's a case right across the emerging world. India, China's switching very quickly, of course, to 4G and of course, 3G. But right across Africa, 2G feature phones are still massive. In fact, the latest numbers from, I forget if it was IDC or Gartner, but the latest numbers from one of those companies said that the number of feature phones, the growth in feature phones in Africa is outstripping the growth in smartphone sales. People cannot afford to buy smartphones, but they want to be connected, so they're buying these old basic feature phones, a lot of them shipped in from China.
Refurbs.
Yeah, and this is a massive problem for the mobile operators, because the mobile operators, in the South African context, for example, but it's the case in many markets in Africa, they want to push to the latest technology, so they want to use their spectrum to deploy particularly 4G LTE. But they're not getting spectrum assignments. We know the long history of allocating spectrum in the South African context, and you know it may still be years before these operators are able to get access to digital dividend spectrum and even spectrum in 2.6 gigahertz. But the problem is they've got this huge base of customers sitting on the 2G network, so they've refarmed some of their spectrum. I think mainly in the 1800 megahertz band for LTE. But they can't refarm 900, which is ideal for doing LTE, especially outside the cities because of its propagation characteristics. So the idea that Qualcomm has here is that, and of course it's not altruistic of Qualcomm at all, they're pushing their own agenda here, of course, because they want to sell more of these high-end chipsets.
Of course, yeah.
But if you can get more of these 4G devices into the market, then and get consumers off these cheap, I won't call them nasty, just cheap 2G devices, some of them are actually very good, then you can start to think about
freeing up
that spectrum.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what operators in the developed world are already doing. In markets in Europe, the regulators and the operators in North America as well are talking about switching off 2G. And they're probably going to do it in the coming few years. But our operators are in a much more difficult position because they're still selling millions of these 2G devices every year. So if they can start to sell cheap 4G devices, then there's possibility that they could start to get that 2G base off their network and then start to reallocate that 900 megahertz particularly for LTE in the absence of them getting access to any other spectrum. And we all know what's happened in the broadcasting digital migration story, disaster that's been going on for 10 years now. There's no reason to believe that the broadcasters are going to be out of that spectrum anytime soon. Based on what's happened in the past and all the drama around the stuff, I'd be very surprised if the analog broadcasters are actually out of that spectrum by 2020.
Yeah,
I'd be very, very surprised. I mean, there's been so much political interference and interference amongst the different broadcasters as well. It's been, as you said, it's been going on for years and years. I even think 2020 is being optimistic when you look at the history of what we've been through with that.
Yes. Well, at the rate we're going, though, I suppose, giving the spectrum to the operators and the broadcasters getting out of that spectrum is actually, in the long term, is probably bad for the broadcasters because people are going to consume more and more media over the mobile networks. It'll increasingly become the platform through which people get entertained. MultiChoice and ETV fighting with each other for years over the spectrum, perhaps it advantages them in some way because it's not getting that cheap broadband in the hands of consumers, so people are more reliant on their terrestrial services. Maybe that's a bit of a cynical argument to be made. But
I mean, I think chatting to the guys here, one actually gets the feeling that they know that they have to move into those directions, and if they don't, make those changes and move in that direction, they're going to get left behind. Yeah. I mean, it's happened across the rest, as you say, in a lot of the developing markets. It's already happened.
Absolutely.
Trying to hang on to it, I think, is fruitless, really.
Mm. We've certainly seen MultiChoice making some big efforts in getting more internet savvy, if you like. And of course, there's the DStv Now platform, which works reasonably well. But the terrestrial broadcasters don't really seem, from what I've seen anyway, maybe you've got more of an insight, Simon, but the terrestrial broadcasters in South Africa, apart from MultiChoice, don't seem to really have much of a strategy around delivering their content on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I'd go with you on that. And talking to the guys, MultiChoice definitely, I think they have a very, very clear strategy, and they've got, I wouldn't be surprised if they pull a few more rabbits out of the bag with that. I think they're all over it. They see where they are losing on subscription-based television, terrestrial. But the rest of them, I really don't know. I don't think I can't see SABC making those changes. I think they've got so many other issues to try and sort out. I think they're going to get left behind with it.
I think licensing content for online use, because it's such a competitive space now. I mean, if you've got Netflix, Netflix will probably license a lot of good stuff. Showmax will have, the other portion. For new players to come in now, even existing broadcasts to make the transition successfully, they've already got such tough competition out there. Mm. Licensing is going to get tricky. And they're probably committed to terrestrial broadcasting licensing exclusively, which they can control much better than online exposure, online broadcasting.
Mm. Yeah, I think it'll be, going to that licensing issue, I think it'll be interesting to see actually what happens with that, because online content and licensing around that, I think it really gives the content holders the opportunity to spread that license a lot, a lot broader, and not just stick with one particular provider. So I think they've also cottoned on to that. I mean, you look at the sort of the pay-per-view kind of concepts and that sort of thing in the States. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing that kind of thing.
I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet. Pay-per-view is such a fantastic concept. Mm. Just, I'll pay for the content at the price of a movie ticket, probably even more, $150, $200 if it's an early release title.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money now, but it's...
I think it's where we need to go. Otherwise, people are going to keep pirating.
Mm,
that's sure. a huge issue still.
For sure. So, yeah, we went from $20 smartphones to...
We're so passionate about this.
Indeed.
Yeah, but maybe a question. That $20 smartphone, is that... So accessing the internet on that, it won't be for that. It'll basically be used for certain applications that can then, you know, use the 4G network?
It's running Android, so
okay.
It's an old version of Android KitKat for now. I presume it's going to get this newer iteration of Android that they announced at I/O this year, later this year when it becomes available. But for now, it's running KitKat. But that means you can run anything.
That's more than adequate for most apps, communication apps.
Yeah, you can probably absolutely. Run Facebook. In fact, they confirmed you can run Facebook and WhatsApp on it, which are probably the two most in-demand apps on the smartphones. You're not going to use this thing to play games, but and it's got a very small screen. It's got either a 2.4 or 2.8 inch display. It really looks like a candy bar feature phone. But it's category 4 LTE, so it's capable of up to 150 megabits a second, in theory. You connect to the internet, you can probably do your email on this thing.
I don't think it's got a camera on.
It does. It's got a 3 megapixel rear face. Sorry, a 1.3 megapixel rear facing and a 0.3 megapixel.
So you can essentially do video calls with that over 4G,
very
low res.
Very low quality video calls, but it's got a low quality VGA screen.
Yeah.
But if you call into another such phone, you know, it'll be more than adequate, you know, especially to see someone's face, which I think is such an essential way to communicate for people in distance, across distances.
Yeah, and bringing a phone in at 300 Rand for a brand new phone as opposed to buying a second-hand one, old stock.
New revenue, you're not losing out on that revenue.
Yeah. Of course, the price of 3G phones has come down a lot as well. I think Vodacom is selling its Smart Kicker handset now for 399 Rand.
Wow, that's impressive.
Okay. We're not talking a huge price cut from there. But you know, there's a big market of people who can't afford a 399 phone. They're in the 299 or 199 category.
Yeah, sure.
You know, guys who go to Pep stores and they buy the cheapest phone because it's all they can afford.
Yeah.
Interesting. There's a big move by the operators. Certainly Blue Label Telecoms is looking at doing it. I hear rumors that Vodacom is looking at doing it, and that's starting to provide financing into that low end of the market. So even if you can't afford to buy that Smart Kicker 399 smartphone, you can buy it on easy financing.
5 rand, 10 rand a month probably, or 5 rand, 10 rand a week. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think it's a big market that, you know, we've been focused on the high-end devices for so long. I guess these manufacturers also realize with the recycling of existing old devices, you know, we need to get into these markets and give them not something that, just something that's good technologically, but also, you know, that really serves a purpose. And I think communication, the underlying fact of getting people easy access to communication and information, is such a critical human right these days. This really goes to that.
In fact, one of the operators was saying to me this week that hand-me-down phones are actually a big problem for them because it gets the penetration out there, but these 2G phones never die; they just get passed on.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you know, every time, you know, I get an upgrade and so on, I, you know, pass it on.
Yes,
I do the same thing.
Yeah.
I think somebody else can get the benefit of what I had. It's, you know, still in good enough condition, and there it goes.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. So it's an interesting one. But certainly Vodacom is doing well despite the economy. People are still making calls. Well, they're actually making fewer calls, but they're surfing the internet a lot more than they used to, and that's where the growth is coming from. I think voice revenue was down about 4% year on year in their latest quarterly numbers. So I think it's the first quarter of their 2018 financial year to the end of June. But company doing incredibly well. The share price touching just under 180 Rand a share, which is an all-time high.
Wow.
And it's on the back of strong demand for data. We all know that Vodacom is not the cheapest operator in South Africa, especially when it comes to data. But consumers seem to have an appetite for their network, and it probably speaks to the fact that they've got such wide coverage, that people are perhaps prepared to pay a premium over some of the cheaper offerings in the market.
Yeah. And more hand-me-down phones, smartphones mean more, you know, smartphones out in the market using this data, you know.
Indeed. more and more people are on data now. In fact, I think 60, I stand to be corrected, but I think I saw 60% of Vodacom's base is now using data services on a regular basis. It's making up something like 39% of their total service revenue. It's not going to be long now before data is the majority of their revenue.
I guess it's time to do another poll. How much of your data do you use in your phone, and how much have you converted to Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
How much voice call do you make versus data calls these days?
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's not getting. I think not long ago it was a bit strange when you received a WhatsApp call, and now you know very quickly quite used to it, and it's you don't almost find it invasive now or rude or anything like that. I think when I first started off and somebody phoned me on WhatsApp, if I didn't know them well, I thought it was almost rude.
Yes. No, I mean, you can add anybody out of the blue now. It's an acceptable form of communication.
Yeah, for sure. So excellent numbers from Vodacom this week, and we'll talk about them a bit later in the show. But right now we need to take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fibre to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fibre, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to Talk Central. How's it, Richard? How's it, Simon?
How's it?
Great, good to be here.
So, OpenServe, did you see the news this week that they are cutting their IPC and fiber prices?
Yeah, there's been something coming now, and I'm very happy about that.
But these are quite aggressive price cuts, 25% on IPC, and this comes just 2 months after they cut IPC back on June 1, less than 2 months.
I think we're getting close to a time where a 50 meg connection like the one that I've got is going to get in under R1,000. I think within the year we'll probably see something like that.
I think we're already seeing 100 megs on certain ISPs. I'm sure they're there's some.
Yeah, they normally have a 5 meg up or something like that.
Yeah, I think even 100 meg connections are going to be under R1,000 pretty soon. In fact, I think we've seen one or two ISPs offering that. Of course, we've got Vumatel introducing 200 megasecond fiber on the 1st of August. That's been confirmed now. A number of ISPs are already advertising prices around that.
You're itching to get one, aren't you?
I can't wait. my service provider, fiber service provider, hasn't advertised anything yet, but I'm sure it's coming. If they don't, I'll just have to move to another ISP.
And one can transition so easily these days.
Easily, indeed.
Yeah, for sure. But I want to know, I mean, all of these guys are offering uncapped packages, quite easily.
A lot of them are.
I wonder how do they sustain it for so long? I mean, I'm using a lot of data these days because I'm streaming everything in HD. I can only imagine how much that actually consumes.
You'd actually be surprised at how little data you use, I think. You stream a lot of data, but I used to be on a capped connection. I also streamed a lot, and I didn't really use more than about 300 to 400 gigabytes a month. And if you look at the capped prices for 300 or 400 gigs a month, it's actually below what you pay for uncapped. So I don't think they're losing money.
Yes.
Of course, there'll be the outliers, the guys that get the uncapped and then burn through terabytes on peer-to-peer networks and that sort of thing.
On educational files, educational videos.
Creative Commons content. I think what we're seeing now is that uncapped is a sustainable model. It's been sustainable on DSL for the longest time, so there's no reason it shouldn't be sustainable on fiber. And I suppose that these ISPs, if they identify customers who are burning through 5 terabytes a month, they can always find ways of throttling them if they need to.
For sure. It's just nice not to think about data these days. It really is.
It is. Yeah,
that's refreshing.
Simon, you haven't got your fiber in yet. You're still on.
No, I'm still on. No, it's still backwards.
What do you have at the moment?
Just a 10 meg line through Telkom.
I remember those days.
Do you? they've recently put them into the complex, but I haven't actually made that transition. Maybe it's just laziness.
No, you must. You've got to change your life.
got to do it. I used to be on ADSL and my line peaked out at 5 megs a second when it was up, which was about half the time.
That is still the challenge. I mean, it's constantly having to reset things and ask them to reset ports, etc. So, yeah.
But having fiber incredibly stable, it's amazing.
It also is. I mean, you can run things consistently, and I've got multiple devices now, multiple cameras streaming out. It's amazing what you can throw at this thing. But just having that ability to have essentially an uncapped access pushing to the internet as well,
correct.
That to me is a big thing. You know, saving your files online. Everybody's got photographs. Saving, you know, 5-6 years worth of photographs online over an evening.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing to be able to.
Which is near impossible on the line I have.
Yeah, no, you won't be able to.
That's the problem with DSL is the up speed is so slow.
Yeah.
With fiber, the cloud computing paradigm just makes sense. I mean, you use OneDrive or Google Drive or Dropbox as a local drive.
As if it's a local drive.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I've actually gone back to plugging my computer in at home as well, because with Wi-Fi you still lose, you know, 10-20 megs.
Yeah.
But when you're plugged in, you get probably just over the amount that you subscribe to.
So
it's nothing like it.
You wired your house with Ethernet.
Now every house has got, every room's got a little Wi-Fi router just to make sure everything's got the strongest signal. And the important points has got Wi-Fi network points.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. I've dropped Ethernet behind my TV, etc.
Even though I haven't got fiber, I have done that.
Preparing. You are ready for fiber.
I'm ready for it.
Who is your fiber provider, as a matter of interest?
MTN. MTN can put it into the complex.
Okay. Well, they've just announced they're going open access. I use that term in inverted commas.
Yes.
Which means that like Vumatel, like OpenServe, you're going to be able to choose whichever ISP you want on that fiber.
Oh, okay. Mm. Interesting.
Which is fantastic. Yeah, now it's truly become an open platform and you can get the best deals and change it up.
Indeed. So OpenServe announcing that they are slashing prices. So the IPC price is coming down by 25%, which, Simon, means your ADSL is going to get cheaper soon.
Do it, Simon. So it's time to move.
But they're also cutting the cost of wholesale fiber by an average of 9%, so there'll be bigger cuts in some speeds and smaller on other speeds. But I think it's something they had to do because OpenServe has become perceived, and perceived because they are more expensive than some of the other fiber providers in the market. If you go and compare, say, a 100 meg uncapped OpenServe product on, say, an AfriHost. And then compare that with the exact same product on Vumatel. Vumatel is going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
Simply because the wholesale component that Telkom's been charging for that OpenServe fiber is more expensive.
Okay.
Something had to give. So I think that this announcement here, we're going to see those prices probably reaching something near parity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what we've seen from Telkom this week is a response to competition.
Very good thing. And it's nice to be in a position where, again, things are getting cheaper for us.
So competition for Telkom in the last mile. Who would ever have thought?
Feels like we were speaking about this just yesterday, sighing, Duncan.
Yes.
And I mean, that last mile, do you think that's going to really come into play over the next few years strongly?
This is what everybody's fighting for. It's where the money's at, I think. If you own that, you essentially own that customer, that house, that property forever.
Yeah, it's. There has to be consolidation in that market. In fact, we saw some of that consolidation starting to happen this week with Vumatel acquiring the FTTH assets of Link Africa.
Mm.
Link Africa, of course, is a big player down in Durban. They've got a lot of suburbs down there. I think in the highway area as well as sort of north of the city.
Mm.
They've also got some assets up here in Gauteng, which Vumatel has bought. I asked Johan Pretorius, who's the chief operating officer at Vumatel, whether this is the start of the consolidation that everyone's been talking about in this fiber space, because there are about 24, 25 fiber-to-the-home operators in South Africa by current estimations.
Incredible amount, actually.
Yeah, it's a very big number. Most of those guys, of course, are subscale. There are only less than a handful of big guys.
Yeah.
Dominated, of course, by OpenServe, which is the biggest, followed probably not far behind by Vumatel. But his view is that the consolidation is not about to start just yet. This was an opportunistic acquisition. Link Africa felt that they couldn't really serve that home fiber market. They would do a much better job focusing on fiber to the business.
Yeah.
So they sold those assets. So the view is that big consolidation isn't happening yet, but at some point we're going to see someone make a play for Vumatel.
Oh yes, and that's going to be a big number. I would wager a bet to say probably going to be one of the biggest acquisitions in South Africa when that happens.
Well, in our sector for sure. It'll probably be a nine-figure number.
Yeah.
I would estimate it'll be over a billion.
We were there at the start. Remember that, Duncan?
I remember being in Parkhurst when they started trenching. In fact, I went to the...
We went to the launch.
Yes, we were there.
The trenching.
Where they actually dug the first hole. Yeah.
Really?
We should have bought shares there and then.
Neil Schumann was there in his... he's the CEO of Vumatel. Overalls, and he put the spade in the ground, and that was the start of it. It was only about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, fantastic.
Wow, it's all come online very quickly, actually.
Yeah. So OpenServe, they're cutting prices in response to competition, so that's great news for consumers. The last thing I wanted to talk about was Falcon Heavy. This is the rocket ship.
Falcon not so heavy if you're going to be on it. Sorry.
I'm certainly not going to be signing up to be one of the first passengers on this thing. Not after Elon Musk warned this week that... it's going to be a bit risky. You might not survive. In fact, he warned that there's probably a greater than tiny chance that the first flight of this thing is not going to be successful. I don't know if he's planning to put passengers on it for the first time around. I suspect not.
One would hope not.
Yes.
I think they'll put a lot of dummies on there.
Yes.
With lots of data metric capture devices.
Yeah.
Metric data.
But this is the vehicle that he's hoping to use eventually to put a colony on Mars. So
you have to start somewhere, Duncan.
You have to start somewhere. He won't be starting with me, that's for sure. Well, no doubt we'll be... there will be lunatics out there who will be very glad to be on that first flight. I suspect Adriana Maria might be one of them.
Yeah, no, for sure. But on the other side of Elon Musk news, did you hear the rumor that they may get approval to do a New York DC?
I saw that.
Hyperloop line.
I saw that. Yeah.
Make the trip 25 minutes from one city to the next.
How much? I don't know. I haven't driven that.
I think it's 2 or 3 hours now.
Okay. Yeah. It's. That's going to be an expensive project.
But again, it's amazing to see that it'll be amazing if we can just start with these things. These are, again, ways to bring people together around the world. Effortlessly.
You have seen what that company's called.
Sorry?
You have seen what his company's called that's doing it.
No, I haven't.
The Boring Company. If you look on his profile, it just says Boring.
Boring.
Yeah.
It's a bit larger at MediaTek. I think somebody just opened up a demo.
And apologies for that. That's why I was waving my arms around trying to get people to go. The sound police to kick into action.
Sorry to rain on your parade, guys. Just a few more minutes, please.
No, but it's actually great fun being here at MediaTek. I should have mentioned this at the beginning of the show. We're sitting in a bit of a fishbowl here in the middle of the show floor. So we've got a crowd of people. Actually, they've dispersed now. But we had a crowd of people around us a few minutes ago.
Yeah, you do feel a bit like a goldfish.
Like you're being watched. But it's kind of fun. It's certainly more entertaining than the usual four walls that we record in. But so thanks for having us, Simon.
Great always having you guys here.
So that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. And our winner this week, I think, has to be Bitcoin and the Bitcoin community.
Oh, yes.
So it looks like the split has been averted. We've seen the wild ride that Bitcoin price has been on over the last month or so. Mm. It went up all the way to $3,000, then came crashing down to about $1,800 on worries that the community wasn't going to agree on the standard going forward for Bitcoin mining. There was, I think, Rashad, you probably know the details better than I do, but it had something to do with the amount of time I'll wing it. It had something to do with the amount of time that it was taking to process Bitcoin transactions, and so they had to change the way the whole currency worked, how it processed transactions.
Because it became very difficult. It was virtually impossible for anybody new coming on board to mine Bitcoin. And
I don't think that was the issue. It was how long it would take to actually just process a Bitcoin transaction. And the fact it was taking so long was undermining its value as a currency. And there were two proposals put on the table. And I apologize to any Bitcoin experts because I'm probably butchering this horribly. But there were two proposals put on the table, and there was a bit of a war going on in the Bitcoin community about which one should should take precedent. The Bitcoin miners were arguing for one thing and the rest of the community was arguing for something else. Eventually there was a compromise reached in something called SegWit 2X, and there was worry that the community wouldn't embrace this, particularly the Bitcoin mining community. Now what's happened now is that it's reached that 80% threshold, actually gone way beyond the 80% threshold that they needed for SegWit 2 to become accepted as the standard way of, I'm not sure what the correct term is, of conducting transactions on Bitcoin. I could be wrong in saying that, but...
I think you've done a good job so far. Yeah, I understand.
Putting it into layman's terms.
Yes, a layman trying to explain something technical. And so it appears that they're going to avoid a split. So the Bitcoin, if you go and have a look at the Bitcoin graph of its value on Google Finance, for example, you'll see it plummeted over the last couple of weeks from 3,000 to below 2,000. Now it's bounced all the way back, almost back up to $3,000 again.
Wow.
If indeed that split has been averted, and assuming you believe in the inherent value of Bitcoin as a store of value, then you know, the path is probably cleared for this thing to continue rising.
No, definitely.
Do you own any Bitcoin, Simon?
No, I don't.
No. Neither do I.
I did mine a little bit in the beginning. It was relatively easy, but I lost my account.
We hacked.
I just lost the details to my account, and I couldn't recover it. Some reason, I couldn't find my you get a number, like a hash number that your account is. And it was all anonymous. It wasn't apps like you get today. It was, you know, you were working with the servers. It was.
So how many Bitcoins did you lose?
I think I had 1.6.
1.6, okay. Yeah. So,
Which I thought was nothing. And I kind of lost it.
That's about $4,500 you lost?
Yeah.
Not $4,500. $4,500. Yeah. A whole lot more than $4,500.
And I forgot about it for a long time because, as a geek, you always play with these things, put it away, forget about it, lost the details. When it became big a few years back and it shot up, I really looked everywhere for that key.
Do you think it is the currency of the future?
Maybe not Bitcoin directly, but cryptocurrency.
Cryptocurrency,
Definitely. I mean, it has to be. I think currency, paper currency, or in a currency based on a physical asset like gold is, it's reached a finite, finite threshold. Yeah. I'm not an expert in these things, but we need something that we can transact more better, more efficient with, I think.
I mean, something else might emerge that that supersedes Bitcoin. It might be Ethereum. It might be. I mean, there's so many of these things. I mean, there are dozens, probably hundreds of cryptocurrencies, if not more.
And that's why I don't understand it. I mean, I actually need to do some research and then really get stuck into it. We need to speak to Simon
Dingle. We should actually get Simon on the show sometime.
He's
an expert. But of course, we had Vinny Lingham on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about his initial coin offering. So he provided some real interesting insights into the world of cryptocurrencies during that discussion, which is of course also about his startup Civic. But let's get Simon on the show sometime. He's based in Cape Town, of course, but maybe he's up here sometime. Otherwise, we can just Skype him in. And
I'm sure Tech Central can fly us down for a weekend.
Yeah,
let's see if we can get a sponsor.
We'll stay at the Mount Nelson and
weekend away.
Indeed, for the blog, for the podcasters,
for the podcasters.
Cool. So where were we? That was our winner. A loser this week. I sort of pick anyone trying to compete with Vodacom. Because they really are firing on all cylinders. They're doing really clever stuff with big data, with artificial intelligence. You know, they're... you see headline tariffs in the market now for data and for voice as well. But that's not what consumers on Vodacom are paying. They are offering personalized bundles based on your purchase history and what Vodacom knows about you. So they're doing this sort of analytics on their back end, and they're able to determine all sorts of interesting things, probably more things than we care to know about. But they can determine, is this guy likely to buy this much data?
Yeah.
What price point is he willing to accept? And then when you go start 111# on your phone on Vodacom, and you bring up that menu, it'll say, well, Ed, would you like to buy this much data? It looks like you're running a bit low. Or it could proactively send you a message.
Knows you as a customer.
Proactively send you a message saying, hey, we see you're running low on data. We know you like this amount of data. Here's a special of 99 Rand on a gigabyte. Would you like it? And just press yes on your phone.
That's awesome.
It's clever stuff.
That's awesome.
Clever stuff. And it's starting to show in Vodacom's results. I mean, the strong growth they've shown in data, the good financial performance that they've managed to achieve in a very depressed economy, suggests that they're firing on all cylinders, that those underpinning systems are doing a lot of good for them. MTN is coming off a bad couple of years where they've had a huge turnover in CEOs in management. I mean, the management at MTN is completely new compared to what it was 18 months ago. Cell C, of course, is they're fighting hard. They've got a new shareholder coming in who's no doubt going to have some new ideas. But they're all good. They all have to compete with this big gorilla in the room, which is Vodacom. MTN's got a stable management team now, but they've got a lot of legacy issues they need to sort out, and then they need to start to chip away at this edifice called Vodacom. Cell C needs to do the same. Telkom is subscale in the mobile game. They're boxing very cleverly with the freemium plans, are gaining market share. It's difficult when the big player in the market is not resting on its laurels
and not fighting it on price. They come out with. It's one of the more expensive in terms of data.
They do at the headline level, but they're not necessarily always the most expensive when you get into these personalized offers on Vote. They're called Vote Just For You.
Okay.
So they send these messages to you, or you access them via their USSD portal, and it's offering you personalized pricing. So they might say that a gigabyte on Vodacom costs 199 Rand, but in reality people may actually only be paying 89 Rand, which may be actually be less than the headline price on Telkom or on MTN.
Yeah, interesting. But it's interesting that the perception is that they're almost not fighting it on price.
That's the perception.
For sure.
They're pegged there, but they're actually fighting it on technology and strategy.
If you look at their deals, the data deals and the voice deals, for sure.
I mean, certainly if you as a customer, if you're walking into a Vodacom shop, you're not going to get the cheapest deal necessarily. You're probably going in there because you're going to get the coverage you want. Perhaps because one of the others doesn't have coverage where you work or where you live, or you travel a lot outside the cities where Vodacom is known to have pretty robust coverage relative to the other operators.
Yeah.
So this market is mature now. It's not like the old days where it didn't matter which operator, you could just sit rest on your laurels and the customers would come. Today you have to fight for those customers because people churn between networks. There are an estimated 90 million active SIM cards in South Africa now.
Wow.
So we're
that's incredible.
Give it another couple of years and we'll probably be at 200% penetration.
I mean, how many people have got two phones that you know? I know quite a few people carry around two phones.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably...
Make sure you've got the best both worlds.
I'm not the average person, but I've probably got about 20 active SIMs.
So you're searching for the best deal, eh?
I'm certainly on the other side of the spectrum then, walking around with one.
Okay. But I'm actually a customer of every network. I'm a customer of every network. Maybe I need to consolidate.
Consolidate.
Let's not do it with one of the losers then, maybe.
Yeah, but I carry two of those little Huawei dongles in my bag.
Yeah.
One's got an MTN SIM and the other one's got a Vodacom SIM in. My phone's got a Telkom SIM in. That way I figure I'm pretty much covered, if one of the networks isn't available, because I have to travel around and work a lot and, if I need a signal wherever I am. So it's important that I have a signal. So I have a SIM from every network. Not a huge amount of data from every network, but
at least it gets you around, especially if you need. I mean, in your job, you can't be without data, especially if you're in a grocery store.
Exactly.
But for us mere mortals, Duncan, we only post once a day or once a week.
How many SIMs do you have, Rafa? Come on.
Well, actually, I've got one SIM with, one account with two SIM cards linked to it. So I've got a second SIM that I use. So I don't have to worry about additional data. It all just gets deducted off my own account.
Do you have a dual SIM phone?
No, I've got a single SIM phone. But also, I use two devices, but my second device, I don't have a SIM in it. I just have it as a Wi-Fi, because it normally connects, everything connects to my iPhone.
Is that your AfriHost SIM?
This is my AfriHost SIM. My AfriHost SIM is in my main phone, that's my main data.
Right.
My secondary SIM is mainly a voice SIM, but when I use data, it comes off my 500 megabyte free minutes free data that I get on my normal account. Because with AfriHost, once you use AfriHost, you relinquish your MTN data that you get.
Yes.
You don't access that part of your account.
Yeah, okay.
So you guys should just stick with one.
Yes,
maybe Vodacom after anybody anybody else is a loser, and keep it simple like I do.
There we go. Vodacom is our Vodacom is not a winner. Our loser this week is anyone except Vodacom, or anyone trying to compete with Vodacom, rather. Let's move on to our picks, rather. Simon, you've got an interesting one. We spoke about it, actually, when we were on the podcast 2 weeks ago. It's called Black Tracks. Just to remind everyone what that is and why you're excited about it today.
Well, so as we heard, was it a week ago, 2 weeks ago? It's motion control. So it's used in the live events industry. Very similar to what they've been using in gaming for a while, but when you're starting to move, you know, huge projection and huge lighting control, etc. Black Tracks has really, really pioneered in that space. So that's, you know, was my pick a couple of weeks ago. I saw it in Germany and was absolutely oblivious to the fact that one of the distributors here had planned to launch it here at MediaTek. So we've actually seen it here in MediaTek. I was excited about it coming to South Africa. I think it, if we can see that in some of the productions, it's going to be awesome.
Oh, fantastic. In fact, Simon, you sounded positively distraught when we spoke 2 weeks ago that it wasn't going to be at MediaTek.
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke to the guys and I said, how could you have kept it such a secret? I said, I even spoke about it on Tech Central. And I said, you made me look like a fool saying that, you know, I didn't think it was going to come.
So here it is. The show ends today, doesn't it, Simon?
Yeah, that's right. We close it at 6 o'clock this evening.
Okay, actually. This podcast, I'm afraid, is not going to get out in time, but I'm sure it'll be here next time around, right?
Absolutely.
So yeah. the show is biannual, so the next one will be in 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it seems a bit strange with the pace at which technology moves, but the number of international clients that we have coming out here, it kind of works for them. You know, they're working on a global scale, and that kind of fits into a bit of a circuit.
Okay. So, unfortunately, if you haven't been to MediaTek yet, you have missed Black Tracks. But I'm going to go and have a look at it as soon as we finish podcasting here. What's your pick, Richard?
So, I have a little pick that I came across the other day. Now, and the more I think about this, the more, actually, to be honest with you, I'm a little worried about this one. But let me tell you what my pick is, and I'll tell you the reason why I like it. It's called Mozilla Common Voice. It's an open source project in which Mozilla wants to create an open source platform for voice recognition. So what they do on this platform that they created is they want you to either validate audio that you hear with a sentence on screen, because they're trying to build a database, intelligence database of, you know, audio to text and reverse. But what you can also do is you can donate your voice by reading sentences that they give you. So once you sign up, they provide you with some content. You read that, and that again goes into the machine that other people can validate on their web page. I think it's a nice project, and I can see the benefit in having, you know, people having access to an open source platform to develop software or apps or content or whatever for voice. So from that point of view, I think it's great. But the more I thought about it, you know, I'm thinking, having access to, you know, so much data, you know, it could be used to obviously interpret voice much better, but that's also going to introduce a rogue element to it, I guess. With access to the data, now you can plant microphones anywhere, have something interpreted. I guess you've got access to it regardless, but I still think it's a nice project.
I'm going to go have a look at that. It's voice.mozilla.org.
Voice.mozilla.org.
Sounds interesting. I'm going to go have a look at that this afternoon. My pick this week, and I thought, let me throw some love at the rest of the podcasting community here in South Africa and pick some of my favorite podcasts over the next few weeks. One show that has become indispensable to me every week, and as you know, Richard, I'm very interested in South African politics and everything that's going on. And the show that's become indispensable listening is Justice Malala's The Burning Platform on Cliff Central. It's a political discussion, an hour every week he has with Gareth Cliff about what's happening in politics in South Africa, and it's a really, really good, easy listen.
Nice.
And if you don't know the podcast, I'm sure many of our listeners are really aware of The Burning Platform, but if you're not aware of it and you're interested in knowing what's going on in this crazy country called South Africa, The Burning Platform is a really, really good podcast, so go check it out.
Yeah, I subscribe to it on your podcast app recommendation as well.
Okay. Very cool. And that is our show. Apart from our quiz results, shall we get to those? Richard, do you want to kick off with the first question, and then Simon, you can do the second.
The first question. The Tech Central this week published a podcast with former CTO of Business Connection, who is working on a reversible hydrogen cell. Who is he? And for a bonus point, what is this reversible fuel cell called? And the answer is Andy Brower and Rigel.
Right, and the second one was, we're recording Tech Central at MediaTek Africa 2017. Where is the event taking place? And the answer is the TicketPro Dome in Randburg in Johannesburg.
Our third question, SAP is fighting allegations of kickbacks involving its South African operation. Which SAP board member has been parachuted into the country to deal with the crisis? And the answer there is Adair Fox-Martin.
The fourth question, semiconductor company Qualcomm is facing a bruising and increasingly acrimonious legal battle with which smartphone manufacturer? And the answer there is Apple.
And our last question, who has been named as interim SAP Africa MD in the wake of allegations of kickbacks involving a Gupta-owned company? And the answer there is Klaus Quinnemann. And that is our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, please drop us a note. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Simon Robinson, thanks so much for hosting us at MediaTek 2017. Fantastic show, and we look forward to seeing you at the next one.
Great, thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you guys here.
Cheers.
Thanks, Simon, and until next time, from Rachat and myself, cheers.
Ciao.